Jean Balance. I'm coming from the EPA's Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, and I'll be helping to moderate discussion on understanding the fiscal year 12 Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Proposal Guidelines, which has been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. For those of you who have not participated in the CLUIN Internet Seminar before, CLUIN seminars are very similar to conference calls. Individual participants will register to either dial in the phone line or listen to that audio through their computer speakers. And then each participant is expected to either download a copy of the presentations or open up a copy of the PowerPoint slides in a web browser window. If you haven't done that already, you'll find information on accessing the slides on the seminar homepage. That's the same page that you use to register. It was the same page you would have gotten in a confirmation email, the same URL that would have been sent to you in a reminder email. If you go to that seminar homepage, there are links that appear on the far left side, button that says Go to Seminar, which will load the slides in the web browser window. Or you can follow the links at the bottom of the page to actually download it as a PowerPoint or PDF file, whichever works for you. Each of our individual instructors will be verbally guiding you through the material. So just along those lines, I'm on slide number 2, which is our housekeeping slide. Those of you who are joining us by phone, we do ask that you keep your phone lines on mute. And again, I will mute myself out in just a moment. You can use your own mute button or hit *6 to mute your line. When we get to time for Q&A, which will be held until after the presentations today, you'll be able to take yourself off of mute to ask the instructors a question. But until then, please keep your phone call on mute. Don't put the call on hold. There could be background noise or commercials that will be disruptive. So again, please keep your line muted with your own mute button or *6. Questions will be held to the end of the formal presentation, and at that time, we'll remind you how to unmute and ask your question. Those of you that are streaming audio online, though, will not be able to ask questions out loud. And instead, you'll be using a number of icons looking at the slides online to help you submit questions. Just a refresher, if you're looking at the slides through a web browser window, you can move through the slides using the numbered links that appear on the left side or using the arrowed icons that are orange buttons along the top of the slides. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow to the left will move you backwards one slide. The little orange icon with a question mark at the top of the slide, as long as your pop-up blocker is disabled, if you click that, a new window will open up where you can actually submit or type up your question electronically. And when we get to the time for Q&A, I will read your questions out loud on your behalf so the instructors can answer them. You can type up those comments or questions at any point in time. In fact, we would encourage you to do that as soon as they occur to you so that when we do get to that point to take questions, we can run through the questions that are in the queue in a timely fashion. You can also use that question mark icon to report any technical difficulties that you may be encountering. I want to remind everybody that today's session is being recorded. This is the second delivery. We recorded an earlier one but had some problems with people who weren't muted that kind of disrupted the presenters. So I'm hoping that today's recording will go a little bit more smoothly. And as soon as that recording is available, you will automatically receive an email that will give you a link to either download or replay the recorded version for free. You can also forward that on. If you like this type of training and you'd like to work for others, we have a whole bunch of them available. I think there's almost 420 recorded events available on the CLUIN website, and that URL is located on slide number 2. So again, I think those are the end of the reminders I have for today's session. So I'm going to turn things over to our instructors, who will be Joseph Breck from the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization, as well as Kathleen Curry from EPA's Region 4. I'm going to ask everyone to move along to slide number 3. Provide a final reminder to anybody on the phone line, please mute your line using your own mute button or by hitting *6. And with that, I'll turn things over to Kathleen and Joe on slide number 3.
Thanks, Jean. This is Joe Brass from the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. Thanks for joining our call today. I know that we have some past grant recipients who have joined the webinar today, as well as some new faces, which we're really excited about. On slide 4, you'll find my contact information, email address, and phone number, and Kathleen's. On slide 5, the agenda for today, first we're going to provide a little history of what was formerly referred to as the Brownfields Job Training Grant Program, but now we're calling it the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Program. We'll provide some information about the competition, getting started with the application process, the threshold criteria, the ranking criteria, attachments, some helpful tips, next steps, resources, and then we will open it up for questions and answers. On slide 6, that's just a picture of one of our job training grantee programs, the Milwaukee Community Service Corps. On page 7, the history. As I mentioned, this grant program was formerly referred to as the Brownfields Job Training Grant Program. The first seeds of the Brownfields Job Training Program and of the Brownfields Program itself emerged in the early 1990s, reflecting EPA's growing concern for environmental equity, later known as environmental justice issues. Among the lessons learned from the very first EPA Brownfields pilot grant was the realization that the communities surrounding brownfield sites were not benefiting from the job opportunities created by their assessment and cleanup. EPA realized that these brownfields-related jobs were being filled by environmental professionals from other cities due to a lack of environmental training among local workforces. For those who may not be familiar with what brownfields are, you can think of brownfields as, you know, old abandoned mills or factories, mostly commercial properties. You know, think the Rust Belt, Pittsburgh, Detroit, where there's not necessarily contamination on site, but there is the perception that contamination exists. We're talking the vacant buildings, the blight in communities that everyone knows about. Brownfields aren't just an urban issue, though. Brownfields also include mine-scarred land, methamphetamine labs, which is also a rural issue, especially in Indian country, and also abandoned gas stations. So those are just a few examples of brownfield sites. On the next slide, slide 8. While EPA had no resources allocated for job training during the initial years of the Brownfields program, the agency had already collaborated with the Hazardous Materials Training Research Institute to offer environmental education and training program assistance to community colleges located near Superfund and other hazardous waste sites. HMTRI is still a partner with us today, and they are providing technical assistance to our job training grantees and prospective applicants, and we'll provide some additional contact information for HMTRI later in the presentation. With the goal of adding a job training component to the Brownfields program, EPA tapped the expertise of a number of federal entities with established job training programs, including the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. NIEHS today also remains a strong partner in this effort. On page 9, this just provides kind of a timeline of the program. In 1995, EPA announced the first brownfields pilots. For those not familiar with EPA's brownfields program, our program is largely a grant program, so we're providing a lot of funds in the way of assessment grants, cleanup grants, revolving loan fund cleanup grants, and also job training grants. In 1996, EPA signed a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Labor focusing on job training and employment opportunities related to the Brownfields program. In 1998, we established the partnership with the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. And I won't go through every milestone here, but I'll try to point out a few. On the next slide, page 10, in 2002, that's when the Brownfield statute came into effect, referred to as the Small Business Liability Relief and Brownfields Revitalization Act, later known as the Brownfields Law, or referred to as the Brownfields Law. Under the statute, CERCLA now had language specifically authorizing job training grants, and it authorized EPA to provide grants for training to facilitate site assessment, remediation of sites, and site preparation. To date, EPA has funded 191 job training grants, totaling over $42 million. More than 10,300 local residents have completed training, and more than 7,300 have obtained employment in the environmental field, with an average starting hourly wage of $14.12. So that really equates to an approximate 71% placement rate for the program. We do require that prospective applicants this year include or propose at least a 70% placement rate. That's kind of a goal that we set for the program. We would like to see those placement rates come in even higher. We like ambitious applicants, but we also want applicants to be realistic. On page 11, it's really important to note that, again, we changed the title of the program. It's no longer the Brownfields Job Training Program, but now it's the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Program. I know it's a long title, but we really changed it to this title because we wanted to reflect that it was more than just brownfields now. In 2010 and 2011, we really led an effort here to partner with other programs across the agency and to pull different statutory authorities together into a multi-appropriation initiative where we could support other types of training. We partnered with the Office of Resource Conservation and Recovery, that's the RCRA statute, the Superfund program, the Office of Underground Storage Tanks, the Federal Facilities Program, the Center for Program Analysis, and they are focused on preparing formerly contaminated sites for renewable energies, the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, the Office of Wastewater Management, which is new this year, and also the Office of Emergency Management. Slide 12. So the goal was to develop a job training cooperative agreement opportunity that included expanded training and other environmental media outside the traditional scope of just brownfields hazardous waste. As a result of these discussions, the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Program now allows applicants to propose additional hazardous and solid waste, wastewater, and chemical safety-related training. The Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Program also supports OSWERS, that's the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response Community Engagement Initiative. So I think it's important to note that in the past, we did receive many proposals that focused on other types of environmental training, but due to the statutory restrictions that we were using with the brownfields law, we couldn't fund other proposals that were more focused on wastewater, for example. We still don't have the partnerships in place with the Office of Air, so air-related training, that's still not eligible. But we've really expanded it, and we want to really capitalize on the different types of training that communities want to propose. On slide 13, Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grants, in a nutshell, the objective of the program is to recruit, train, and place residents from communities impacted by the presence of a variety of waste facilities, blighted properties, and contaminated sites for environmental jobs that cleanup contractors may otherwise fill from outside. Through this expanded program, graduates attain wider skill sets that improve their ability to secure full-time sustainable employment in various aspects of hazardous and solid waste management and within the larger environmental field. It also provides communities flexibility to propose training that meets local labor market needs. On page 14. Program requirements. Proposed training programs should target unemployed and underemployed individuals. The grant program really isn't meant to provide scholarships, for example, especially we see this with community college applicants. The grant funds aren't really supposed to be used to, enhance those that already are enrolled in college with additional funding, for example. The point of this program is really to train and place local unemployed and severely underemployed residents. Applicants will be evaluated on the extent to which they have partnered with local contractors and other stakeholders working on EPA-funded projects for brownfields, federal facilities, Superfund, underground storage tanks, landfills, oil spill sites, or EPA-funded state or tribal corrective actions, or closures at solid or hazardous waste facilities. Applicants should establish procedures to ensure that graduates will be employed in environmental work that involves preventing, assessing, managing, and cleaning up contaminated sites, working on wastewater issues, and with a focus on the graduates' respective communities. EPA's Brownfields program and OSWER are committed to integrating principles of environmental justice by helping communities revitalize contaminated properties, mitigate potential health risk, and restore economic vitality. The job training grant program, given that majority of folks that we are serving are low income and minority, the program was really created to benefit those that were historically affected by pollution and waste in their communities. This is really a grant program that provides an opportunity for those who've been affected to reap the benefits from when revitalization comes to their neighborhoods. I think it also, you know, we really have to stress that the objective behind this grant program is not just to train folks for the sake of training. The point of this program is to put people in full-time sustainable employment with livable wages. You know, as my mentor always said, you know, training for the sake of training, it's the biggest disservice that we can provide to individuals who are coming to this program, who are looking for work. If they don't have a job at the end of the program, we've really provided a disservice to those. On page 15, the core curriculum, all environmental workforce development and job training proposed program must include the following. OSHA 29 HAZWOPR. This is the 40-hour HAZWOPR certification. And all of these different types of core requirements must be provided to every individual who's going to be recruited into the training program. So the first requirement is the 40-hour HAZWOPR. We really stress the importance of the 40-hour HAZWOPR. Perhaps you are an applicant, you're interested in really focusing on wastewater. That's great, but you do have to provide the 40-hour HAZWOPR. We really want to stress the importance of environmental health and safety, and in many instances, we know that graduates who are doing remediation work, if they don't have the 40-hour HAZWOPR, they're not going to be able to even step foot on that site. So we want to stress the environmental health and safety component of the program. We also require underground storage leak prevention training, solid waste management or cleanup related training, innovative and alternative treatment technologies training. Some of you might say, what does innovative and alternative treatment technologies mean? I encourage everyone on the phone today to look at the frequently asked questions that are on the Brownfields website, and we get some examples of what these types of training include. We also require wastewater related training and specialized training in reducing exposures and promoting the health and safety of workers, in chemical stewardship, pollution prevention, general worker practices, or existing chemical specific worker training. Next slide. So I just listed all the required training. That's we kind of refer to as the core curriculum. But on page 16, something that I, you know, is unique about this program is that applicants have the ability to design their curricula otherwise. So we really encourage supplemental training. While traditional curricula have focused on hazardous waste training, EPA encourages applicants to supplement this training with additional specialized training in other environmental issues. Other specialized training, we have, you know, some examples here. It could include green building design, heavy machinery operations, commercial driver's license, oil spill response, ecological restoration, electronics or debris recycling, freon extraction, confined space entry. The list goes on and on. So please pay careful attention to the request for proposals and the frequently asked questions where we get more information about what eligible types of training there are. Please, please make sure to directly link proposed training with employer needs. Just because you think preparing formerly contaminated sites for renewable energy installation sounds like something, you know, really interesting or maybe cutting edge. If there is not a demand for it on behalf of the employers who you have surveyed, you know, maybe you shouldn't include it in your proposed curriculum. Next slide, page 17. So what are some of the job examples graduates of this program go on to do? Environmental technician, recycling center operators, emergency response technicians, GIS technicians. GIS is an eligible use of funds, training in GIS, that is. Treatment, storage, and disposal facility technician, health and safety, hazardous materials transportation. If you're on the Mexico-U.S. border, I know this is a huge issue. Hazmat and CDL. Wastewater treatment facility operator and construction, plumbers, electricians. In many instances, we have a lot of applicants that come in who have existing expertise in the trades, whether it's carpentry or steel workers or, you know, electrical-focused, you know, training providers. And then they supplement this grant funding and the environmental training with the trades. So, just an example. On page 18, historically, EPA has set a high standard for successful job training grant applications. In past years, an average of 1 out of every 4 applications was funded per solicitation. In FY11 last year, EPA received a record number of proposals, and only 1 out of every 12 applicants was funded. For those that might be considering applying for the first time, don't be intimidated. From year to year, 90% of previously unfunded applicants who reapplied are successful and consequently were funded after reapplying. FY12's total estimated funding available for the program is approximately $2.8 million. We anticipate awarding 10 to 14 cooperative agreements with maximum values of $200,000 each for a 3-year project period. Last year, grant awards were up to $300,000, but due to budget constraints, this year we've lowered the amount back to $200,000, which it traditionally was. Page 19. Getting started. To begin the application process, you can go to www.epa.gov/OSWR. And click on the grants and funding link. You can also go to the EPA Brownfields website and access it there, or you could access it through grants.gov. Applicants may choose to submit application packages either in hard copy format or electronically through grants.gov. Just a reminder, you might want to sign up for the Brownfields listserv, and you can receive future notifications about grant solicitations that are posted there, including our assessment funds, our cleanup grant funds, and other competitive grant opportunities. On page 20, paper submission. Applicants must submit 2 complete application packages, including all of the documents identified in the guidelines. Complete packages must be postmarked by the closing date and time, which is April 12th, for receipt of application packages. 1 complete package must be sent through regular mail, express mail, or courier to each of the following recipients. Make sure to send a copy of your proposal to Environmental Management Support, EMS, that's our contractor, to Keith Arnold, and to the appropriate regional job training coordinator who is listed in Section 7 of the guidelines. Again, applicants may also submit electronically through grants.gov. We strongly encourage applicants who want to submit electronically to start the registration process now, because it can be kind of confusing for those that might not be familiar with it. So pre-register now. Next slide. We're now on slide 21. Again, the due date for proposals is April 12, 2012. Only use 1 method, either a hard copy submission or electronically. I think I covered some of this other stuff here on page 22. Here's another picture of Oregon tradeswomen. This is our one and only all-women's training organization, a three-time grantee. They've done an excellent job. On page 23, these are the threshold criteria. Threshold criteria are evaluated on a pass or fail basis. Regional job training coordinators will be evaluating proposals submitted from their region and will be reviewing the threshold criteria. They may seek clarification from applicants. The threshold criteria include applicant eligibility. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Demonstration that proposed projects do not duplicate other federally funded environmental job training programs. That's really important this year. Number three is the required training. That's the core curriculum training that I went over just a minute ago. And the funding amount. Proposals must not request more than $200,000 with project periods in excess of 3 years. Applicants who received a grant last year in FY11 are ineligible to apply in FY12. However, let me note, if you did receive a grant last year, but you want to come in and propose to serve a different community, most likely a city this year, not a different neighborhood in the same city that you got a grant to serve last year, you are eligible. So I just wanted to make that clear. But the selection official, the senior selection official, will take into consideration those that have received funds in the past and those that have not. EPA will notify applicants not meeting the threshold criteria within 15 calendar days of the failed determination. Proposals that meet the threshold criteria will then be evaluated based on the ranking criteria disclosed in Section 5B. Applications failing any one of the threshold criteria will not be given further consideration, and their proposals will not advance to the ranking stage. Next slide. So threshold criteria one, applicant eligibility. Applicants must demonstrate they are eligible. Eligible applicants include nonprofit organizations, municipalities, quasi-governmental organizations, governmental entities created by state legislators, regional councils or general purpose units of local government, redevelopment agencies, states, tribes, workforce investment boards, and colleges and universities. Nonprofit organizations are eligible for funding. Proof of current nonprofit designation is required at the time your proposal is submitted. That proof and documentation, which was should be included as an attachment, will not count towards the page limitation. Slide 25, threshold criteria number two. Demonstration that proposed projects do not duplicate other federally funded environmental job training programs. Applicants must demonstrate that the proposed training project does not duplicate other federally funded programs for environmental training in your target community. For example, proposed training project must not duplicate National Institute of Environmental Health Science, hazardous waste management training programs, such as the Hazardous Waste Worker Training Program through NIEHS. Other environmental training, such as that offered through the Department of Labor and the Department of Energy. Proposed training must not duplicate another nonprofit organization's or EPA-funded environmental technician training curriculum in the same geographic area. If you have questions about this, you can contact your regional job training coordinator or you can contact myself. But you really want to do your research and make sure that you're not duplicating efforts. Perhaps you do notice that there is another federally funded job training, environmental job training program in your community. Perhaps they are serving a different age group or they are only serving veterans or you can tailor your target audience differently. Just make sure that you're not duplicating those other programs. Federal agencies maintain lists of these grant programs at the following sites. And here we list some of the main websites where you can look. Slide 27. Any proposed curriculum must include the following core training, and each course must be provided to every participant. Again, the required courses include HAZWOPR, the 40 hours, underground storage tank leak prevention training, innovative and alternative treatment technologies training, solid waste training, wastewater related training, and chemical safety related training. I want to point out here, it's really important that you include all these different types of training in your proposed curriculum. We know that not every community is going to have a need for individuals with training in some of these areas. However, if there is a need or based on your employer surveying that you conduct, and you find out that there is a need for underground storage tank prevention training, for example, then, we want to see applicants.
Environmental services.
Oh, yeah.
Can you please mute your line? Thank you. As I was trying to say, if you do find out that there is a need for training in some of these areas, we want to see applicants capitalize and really deliver advanced training in these areas. But on the other hand, if there's not a need for some of these types of training, such as wastewater, you can choose to deliver that training at awareness level training. Awareness level, what does that mean? It could be 30 minutes to an hour. For example, wastewater management. You've got the requirement you have to meet. You could do something simple, deliver training focused on stormwater management. Why is stormwater management important, for example? Awareness level training. Next slide, 28. Application packages must substantially conform to the outline and content detailed in Section 4C. Application must include transmittal letters maximum of 2 pages in single space. That's your cover letter, 2 pages. Pages in excess of the page limitations for the transmittal letter, which is 2 pages, the narrative proposal, 18 pages, and the attachments, 15 pages, that are listed in Section 4C, will not be reviewed. So make sure you pay attention. All application materials must be submitted in English, including support letters. Do not include binders, spiral binding, or color printing. Photos and graphics will not be considered. The transmittal letter and narrative proposal must be typed on letterhead, letter-sized paper with a font size no smaller than 12 point. Make sure your cover letter or your transmittal letter is on letterhead from your organization. We're now going to talk about the ranking criteria, and I'm going to pass it over to Kathleen Curry. Kathleen, are you on mute?
Remember, Kathleen, it's pound 6 if you need to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I had a double muted, I guess. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. An overview of the ranking criteria on slide 29, the applicants must directly and explicitly address all criteria as part of their narrative proposal. Each applicant will be evaluated and scored under a point system, and a total of 100 points possible is the maximum amount received. Each applicant will be evaluated according to the 5 evaluation criteria. Each of the 5 criteria is comprised of sub-factors that vary in scoring value. And please note, the guidelines as outlined in fiscal year 12 Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Grant Guidelines supersedes any information received from any other resource. Next slide. an overview of the criteria, beginning with criterion one, community need. Maximum points for this criterion is 20 points. The second is training program description and anticipated outcomes and outputs. Maximum points we receive there will be 23. Criterion number three, programmatic capability. Maximum points to be received, 24. Community and employee partnerships, number four. Total points to be received for this criterion is 25. Budget resources, including leveraging, total points is 8, which adds up to 100 points. Next slide, slide 31. First criterion is community need. Total points again, 20. First sub-factor is A, community description. 10 points is allotted to this particular sub-factor. Here you are to provide a description detailing your community. It is advised that you use the sample table format below to provide demographic information about your community, including the population, unemployment rate, poverty rate, percent of minority population, per capita income, and or any other relevant statistics that you feel are important to pick accurately your targeted community. You want to discuss how these demographic indicators relate to community challenges that are occurring, including environmental justice concerns such as disproportionate siting of polluting facilities or proliferation of brownfield sites in your community, including environmental, social, public health, and economic issues. Demonstrate how you will recruit and train unemployed or underemployed individuals of a specific population indicative of need, and this would include such persons as ex-offenders, veterans, single-head of households. And please note that you will be evaluated on the extent to which the demographic statistics such as these exceed county, city, state, and or national averages. Next slide. Slide 32 shows you the suggested format for demographic information. We included the national demographic. Next slide, 33. Next criterion under community need is the labor market demand. Detail the methods and the results of recent labor market assessments and employer surveys you have conducted in your community. This is important for the applicant because it is correlated with the training curriculum that you are going to propose. To what extent do these results indicate a demand for skilled environmental professionals with the certificates you are proposing to incorporate into the curriculum? Slide 34. Next criterion is number two, training program description, anticipated outcomes and outputs. Maximum points is 23. First criterion under TPO, as I call it, is the training program structure. This sub-factor is worth 8 points. Please detail your proposed training program in the sample table. The format is provided below. In this table include the course name, the core training and required training, and distinguish this from the supplemental training. Supplemental training, if any, type of certifications to be earned, and make sure you distinguish between programmatic, state, federal certification. Number of hours per course, total numbers of hours for the training cycle, course schedule, and the training provider if known and selected. And please, add or remove columns from the suggested table format provided in the guidelines as necessary to accurately and fully detail your training program. Next slide, slide 35, is the sample table for the training program. Slide 36, second criterion, outputs and outcomes for 5 points. In the sample table format below, You tell how many participants you expect to enroll, the number of students anticipated graduate from the proposed training program, and the target placement rate of graduates in your environmental employment. How will you evaluate progress towards achieving the expected short-term and long-term project outputs and outcomes, including but not limited to those identified in Section 1D, Roman numeral 1D? To what extent is your proposed timeline for achieving deliverables of the project as reflected in the attached milestone schedule clearly identified, detailed, and realistic? Break this down so that you know exactly what is being asked of you in response to each of them. Next slide, slide 37. Criterion C, recruitment and screening, worth 4 points. Describe the process you plan to utilize to recruit students and to market your environmental workforce development job training program. Discuss the screening, retention, and attrition strategies and processes that will be utilized by your program. To what extent will fees, if any, such as for licensing, certification, and medical examination, will burden participants of your program? And please note here that any such fees you collect will be considered program income under 40 CFR Part 3031 and is therefore reportable. To what extent are the training facilities accessible? For example, how close is your training facility to public transportation? Is there parking available? Will there be not out of EPA funds, but transportation bus tokens or whatever available for your students? Next slide, slide 38. Joe, you want to say something?
It's funny you say. I would just, you know, mention that a lot of applicants always ask, well, you know, how many students am I expected to train through the program? And the answer is that we don't have a set number of individuals that you're supposed to train in place through our grant program, and it differs depending on how comprehensive your proposed curriculum is, whether or not you live in a rural or urban area where maybe it's going to be easier or more difficult for you to recruit individuals, and there's other considerations that we look at there. But really, we want to see proposals that train in place as many individuals as possible. Go ahead, Kathleen.
And whatever number you do state, that's what your employer survey is very important, because that will substantiate the numbers that you're planning to train. Because this, remember, the most important part of this project is job placement. Not how many you train, but how many you place. Subfactor D, program support, total points available is 6. Please describe the job search support and resources for participants of your job training program. To what extent will your organization assist with initial job placement and continuous employment for participants? To what extent will your organization track graduates and for how long? The minimum amount of tracking required is for 1 year. To what extent will you utilize federal and local hiring incentives? For instance, First Source, the local hiring ordinance, tax incentives, wage subsidies, etc. That can increase the likelihood of employment for program graduates in your community. And finally, how will you market these incentives to the employers? Do some research, because there are both state, maybe both state, federal, as well as local hiring incentives available for this type of training. And please note, the minimum acceptable placement rate for this competitive town is 70%. That's the minimum you state that you will place, is 70%. Next slide, 39. Programmatic capabilities. 24 points. Available total. First criterion under it is grant management system, 4 points. Please Please respond to the following. Describe the management system you have in place to direct activities on the grant. Include a brief description of your project manager and staff and a discussion of the expertise, qualifications, and experience. Discuss the means you have to retain project leadership or recruit qualified staff should employee turnover occur. This is very important because a lot of programs falter here when the one person, the custodian of all the knowledge, programmatic knowledge, leaves. Always have a backup person that receives dual training. Whatever training the lead project sees, make sure you have, just like on Broadway, have an understudy that's learning the same thing. Describe the systems you have in place to acquire additional expertise and resources required to perform the proposed project. If you intend to contract for the necessary expertise, describe the system that you have in place to acquire the expertise. And here, please refer to section Roman numeral 2E. Next slide, 540. So on the programmatic capability, criterion, organizational experience, 8 points total to be received here. The central organizations and training providers experience in working with minority, unemployed, veterans, and offenders in the community you propose to serve. Describe any previous experience your organization has had in environmental training as it relates to your proposed curriculum. If you do not have an instructor on staff and are considering subcontracting or subgranting to obtain these services, detail the criteria you will use to select these services. Please, if you have a provider selected, provide a commitment letter from your selected provider, training provider, that is. Discuss any experience your organization has in the employment and training field at large. Next slide, slide 41. Audit findings. Describe any adverse audit findings. If you have had problems with the administration of any grants, compliance reporting, expenditures of funds, etc., please describe how you have corrected or are correcting the problems. This is very important on all of the subfacts. If it doesn't apply to you, do not skip it. Respond that this is not applicable and why. If you have never received any adverse audit findings, just state so. State that you have no adverse audit findings. Next slide. Slide 42. Programmatic capability continues. Past performance and accomplishments. If you have ever received an EPA job training grant, you should respond to item numeral 1 below. If you have not received an EPA job training grant but have received other federal and non-federal assistance agreements, because an assistance agreement is a grant, an assistance agreement is a grant or cooperative agreement and not a contract, there's a difference. Including EPA brownfields assessment, revolving loan fund, and cleanup grants, which responds to Roman numeral 2 below. Now, when we say this is not a contract, in a contract, roles are defined. EPA says under assistance agreement, or rather cooperative agreement, that we can step in and be involved in this grant where we feel it is necessary to do so. If you have never received any type of federal or non-federal assistance agreements, please say so in your proposal, and you will receive a neutral score, which is 6 points for this criterion. Remember, again, failure to respond may result in 0 points for this criterion. And here, note. In evaluating the applicant's response to this criterion, EPA may consider relevant information from EPA files and or other federal and or non-federal grantors to verify or supplement information provided by the applicant. And then the next slide discusses Roman numeral 1. Currently or has ever received an EPA Brownfield job grant. Response accordingly. 540 3 deals with, again, Roman numeral 1. 545, again, accomplishments on the Roman numeral 1 for those having had or have a current brownfield. 545, Roman numeral 2, is for those applicants that have not received CPA job training grant but have received other federal and non-federal assistance agreements. 545, again, Roman numeral 2. And a note, again, in evaluating, we can consider any relevant information from EPA file to other grantor's file. Roman numeral 548, community and employer partnership. As you can see, the weight of this is serious, 25 points.
Sorry, Kathleen, we're on slide 48 now, right?
Right, I'm sorry, I'm reading slide 48. Thank you for the correction, Jeff.
Okay, thanks.
Community and employer partnerships, 25 points. Collaboration with solid and hazardous waste site communities. This is worth 4 points. You have to describe any specific efforts that have been made to collaborate with brownfield assessment, revolving loan funds, and or cleanup grantees, or Superfund federal facility leaking underground storage tank, EPA funded state or tribal regulated corrective actions, or landfill closure contractors or wastewater treatment facilities in your community. That is the mouthful. Detail how these efforts will enhance and foster future employment for job training graduates in the area. Describe your organization's relationship with your local economic development office and how this relationship has resulted in placement of graduates with local contractors in your community. If applicable, provide letters of support for any commitments these organizations have made to assist their training program, such as to provide on-the-job training or to hire graduates or assist with life skills, which is not an EPA-funded segment of this project.
Kathleen, this is Joe.
Okay.
Hey, I'm sorry. I just wanted to point out to applicants, under community and employer partnerships, under that first sub-factor, describe efforts that have been made to collaborate with the different types of the EPA-funded projects. This is really important. Again, the point of this grant program is to place local residents at EPA-funded projects or local environmental projects. We really look for that collaboration. It's not the point of the grant really isn't to train individuals to work at, you know, oil refineries, for example. We know it happens, but, you know, ideally this grant program was to train individuals to work at these different EPA-funded type sites, and there's a whole variety of them. Do some research. You can look on the Brownfields website. You can look at cleanups in my community to find out where these different projects are.
And again, as Joe was saying, find these organizations or people in the waste site communities that you like to partner with. Make sure your letters of support are substantive. They must substantiate your statements regarding the partnerships or relationships with the listed organizations to garner the maximum point. Make sure each letter of support is on the partner's letterhead with a current date and includes acknowledgement of the proposed project, support for the project, organization's role and commitment for the project term, and any supplemental funding or in-kind commitment. The statement would be even stronger by assigning a dollar value to any committed in-kind services. Next slide would be 49. Community partnership building. This sub-factor is worth 8 points. Respond to describing your plan for involving the affected community. And this includes the local community groups, workforce, investment boards, and academic institutions located in or near the affected community in the proposed job training program. To what extent did you notify, involve, or hold any public comment sessions in the target community before applying or during the development of your proposal? With this, we would like a date, the meeting, where the meeting was held, the date it was held, whether it was in the evening or morning or afternoon, how many people were in attendance, and if possible, a sign-in sheet if it doesn't take up all of your pages for attachment. And again, make sure each letter of support is on the partner's letterhead with a current date and includes acknowledgement, closed project, support for the project, the organization's role, commitment for the project time, and any supplemental funding or in-kind services. Next slide, slide 50. Community partnership building continues. To what extent have partners committed to providing non-environmental training such as GED attainment, life skills training, transportation, child care provided, personal protective equipment, etc.? Again, attach letters of support indicating these commitments from the organizations listed. Describe how your program or partner's expertise ensures trainees are job ready and have the pre-employment skills needed to secure full-time work. Carefully review section 2D and 2E before identifying a training partner to provide EPA funds to under a procurement contract or sub-grant. Next slide, slide 51, employer involvement, 13 points here. What extent has the employer community, local businesses, environmental contractors, labor unions, site owners, for example, been involved in the development of the proposed job training program? For instance, curriculum development, advisory councils, apprenticeships, mentoring. Detail specific efforts related to employee involvement, such as meeting dates, et cetera, that occurred during the preparation of this proposal. To what extent have employers committed to hiring graduates of your proposed program? And here, we know economic situation. We are not asking employers to commit to a specific number of hirees in your program. Well, we're asking that you have a letter of intent where the employer commits to giving first consideration to your trainers that are qualified, trainees that are qualified for any future positions that they may have open. Discuss any partnerships you have established with employees who have hired graduates of your program in the past. Provide letters of support for past and prospective employees that can affirm their involvement and commitment to this proposed program. Next slide, 52, budget resources. Budget resources are worth 8 points. The budget itself is worth 5 points. If you use table format provided in the guidelines to identify specific tasks for which the EPA funding will be used. You should show the cost by budget category associated with each task. Note the tasks provided in the table below are examples and not necessarily required. In addition to the budget table, describe in narrative format each task in detail, including the basis for the estimated cost as well as the projected outputs where possible, such as student safety equipment for 100 students at a cost of $50 each for a total of $5,000. Note, we encourage the applicants to set aside appropriate funding to support placement and require tracking upon completion of the last training class. And since this is now a 3-year program, we really encourage you to hold that last year back from training and just concentrate on tracking and placement. Looking through my notes to make sure I covered everything.
But don't wait until the very end to start placing people. I mean, start placing people as soon as, you know, your first training cycle's over.
Exactly. Placement is a living entity. It's to continue throughout the term of your project. Okay. In each category, if you do not use the categories that we have provided, category must in the narrative, in detail, its purpose, correlating work plan activity tasks, responsible party costs, projected outcomes, and output. The budget will be evaluated based on the extent that it is clearly stated, detailed, and appropriate to achieve the project's objectives, whether it demonstrates the ability to effectively sustain the proposed project, whether it describes the applicant's plan for managing the budget, and how the applicant will manage the project within cost parameters. And make sure you distinguish between non-EPA funded activities and EPA funded activities. Next slide would be 52. Yes? Oh, no. Okay, yeah. And that's just, well, 53.
What slide are you on, Kathleen?
I see. Slide 53, the budget resource table. Right? Is that the table?
Yes, 53.
Okay. Budget resource, it shows the table and our suggested categories, but again, you utilize the categories that are more applicable to yours as long as they're explained in detail.
Okay.
The narrative part of the budget. Include a short introduction before the budget chart outlining how you intend to spend the grant. Present the budget chart. Include a narrative explaining each of your tasks clearly and completely, including basis for the estimated cost, projected outputs where possible, address each cost presented under a task. The task should correlate with the proposed project work plan. The cost should appear reasonable based on the details in the description. List responsible party assigned to complete the task or activity if known. And again, I did not include outcomes, projected outputs and outcomes where possible. And note, this is where many applicants lose their points. Applicants must provide both the chart and the narrative to receive full points. Next slide. Do not include tasks for activities or costs that are ineligible use of funds under EPA's grant. That's where it is requested that you have a non-EPA funds budget as well. Direct costs for grant administration are ineligible, even if the grantee or subgrantee is required to carry out the activity under the grant agreement. A list of prohibited uses of funds can be found in Appendix 1 of the FY12 guidelines. And go there to look at eligible as well as ineligible, because some costs that are traditionally considered administrative have a programmatic label under this particular grant. Don't use acronyms like CBOs. Spell them all out. If you use them, in parentheses, spell them out. Know what they are. Allocate travel funds to attend National Brownfields Conference and annual job training all grantee meetings. Make sure your budget table adds up to the total requested amount of the funding. Next slide, 56. Leveraging for 3 points. Respond to what extent are in-kind and or partner commitments providing services, resources to the proposed job training program, such as staff time, life skills training, pre-employment training, student stipends, etc. Make sure they are clearly indicated. Also, if possible, make sure you can put a dollar amount to this in-kind commitment. Not required. It just makes it easier for an evaluator to give full merit to your leveraging if they know the dollars that you're building for this program up above and beyond the requested amount for the funding from the grant. Make sure you pick whether these commitments are committed or you're in the process of getting them committed. If they're not committed, what is the likelihood that these commitments will materialize during the project? Describe how your organization will manage this grant in light of the administrative cost provision. And note that there is no cost share required for this grant. Leveraging. When reviewing your budget, ensure that you demonstrated how you will leverage additional funds or in-kind services to carry out your project. Make sure to describe additional sources of internal and external funding already in place. and show how EPA grant funds will be complemented by these additional funding sources or in-kind services. You don't already have additional funding resources in place to indicate when and where you plan to look and how reasonable it is to expect that you will receive. Did you indicate how these additional funds will stimulate economic development after your program has ended? What is the viability for sustainability of your program after the EPA grant? Describe how your organization will manage this grant in light of the administrative cost prohibition. And again, there is no funding match required. Your attachment, documentation of an applicant eligibility, and this is slide 58, reference list, milestone schedule, and letters of support. Applicants that are not cities, counties, tribes, or states must provide documentation and evidence of current nonprofit status under federal, state, or tribal law if applicable. Evidence of nonprofit status must be submitted at the time of application. And the documentation of nonprofit status will not count against attachment page limitation. The references. These organizations may be contacted by EPA during the evaluation process. Note, this is where you are to include a list with contact information, not letters of support from the following. To employees who have hired past participation, past participants of your job training program where applicable, to neighborhood and or community-based organizations aiding in the development of your program, proposed program, and to organizations from the employer community, local business, environmental contractors, site owners that have been involved in the development of your training program. Secure. As part of the agency, company, organization, government office, will whoever you list receives a copy of your client's proposal with the cover letter explaining that you are submitting the proposal. Nothing worse than a listed partner employer being contacted and they don't know anything about the proposal or the proposed training project. So make sure anyone you name in this project, they get a copy of your proposal. Milestone schedule should include start and completion dates for significant tasks, outreach, schedule for procurement of contractors, schedule for that, recruiting and screening dates, training cycle, start and completion date, class schedule, start and end time with total number of hours indicated for each class, placement and tracking, beginning and starting. Again, to be no ending to placement. Tracking will begin at the end of the cycle and from there last for 1 year. Next slide, slide 62, letters of support from community-based organizations, past or potential employers, organizations involved in the development of your job training program, project partners, and or other stakeholders that support your proposed training is required. Support letters will only impact scoring of the sub-factors listed in section 5B5. Roman numeral 5B5 of the guidelines. Letters must be received with the proposal. Letters received separately after the due date for proposed submission will not be considered and will not be included in the distribution of the proposals to the ranking panel. General tips for proposal preparation. Joe, will you take over here, please? My mouth is dry.
Yes.
Thank you.
General tips, you could get mentoring from prior grantees. We have a list of all of our grantees on our fact sheets on our website with contact information. You can pick up the phone and give them a call. Write as though the reader knows nothing about your community. Community need. You know, oftentimes we'll get proposals, and I think, you know, the reviewers kind of know, okay, well, Detroit, yeah, we know some of the issues there. But if you don't tell us about them, we can't give you the full amount of points. Follow the instructions in Section 4. Address all criteria, even if it doesn't apply. Say so and explain why. Avoid using acronyms and technical jargon. Follow cover letter outline. Use white space and obey the 18-page limit for the narrative proposal, the 2-page limit for the cover letter, and the 15-page limit for attachments. Pages in excess of page limitations will be removed. Some of this stuff I already covered. Limit attachments to required and relevant documents and currently dated letters. I always say quality over quantity. Electronic submission of applications is allowed. Next slide. Organize and plan all phases and each element of the project prior to writing the proposal. Quality beats quantity. Make each word count. Too much information is not necessarily a good thing. Do not recycle prior proposals submitted in past years. The RFP's format for this year has changed. Respond clearly and directly to the questions and the guidelines. Avoid unnecessary jargon. Your responses may seem repetitious, but you need to respond as many times as asked. All reviewers may not cross-reference responses. Respond to all criteria. If it doesn't apply, say so and briefly explain why. Address each element of the criteria separately. Next slide. Create a game plan for each section in the application. Identify each query needing a response in each subsection. Speak in present tense, not passive. We held a meeting, not a meeting was held by us. And, you know, for example, in community partnerships or the leveraging, we often see proposals that say, we plan to get funds from this organization to help our project. That is not as strong as a proposal that says, we already have a commitment from this organization. You know, do the legwork now. Don't wait. Identify information that you will need to research or obtain to be responsive. Highlight keywords that you will want to use in your response. For pertinent sections, design the actual plan you will implement if you receive the grant. Be realistic. Don't lie to us. Use your plan to answer the questions. A strong understanding of the concepts and a well-thought-out plan will be reflected in your proposal. Next slide. Here are some of the dates. The request for proposals was issued February 23rd. The deadline for submission of proposals is April 12th, midnight. I suggest don't wait until the last minute. You know, often there's issues. We anticipate that the grants will be announced in June. Could be a little bit later. FY12 applications will be accepted via grants.gov. Remember to register early. Threshold criteria are evaluated by your EPA region. A reviewer may contact you to clarify information in your proposal. Programmatic capability will also be scored by the regional job training coordinator. National panels will then convene and rank proposals. The Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response Assistant Administrator, the selection official, makes final selection determinations. And you can see in the guidelines that there are other factors that the selection official is going to take into consideration, such as fair distribution of funds among the differing regions, urban versus rural, whether you're a federally recognized tribe or proposing to serve tribes, communities that have been recently impacted by natural disasters, for example. There's a list there. I encourage you to take a look at it. What to do now? Access and read for comprehension and clarity the guidelines and the frequently asked questions. I really suggest you read the frequently asked questions. Begin compiling and organizing the required documentation to insert into your application package. Conduct employer surveys and get commitments from employers to participate in your program and to hire. We know that not every employer is going to commit to hire. If they at least have a commitment to interview and a high likelihood of hiring, great. That's better than nothing. Request and collect individualized letters of support on respective letterhead with current date from committed partners. Make sure letters of support contain support in specific roles. Do not give us boilerplate letters of support. Hold a public meeting. Plan to offer opportunity for public comment and input, and not to just inform the public of plans, but really ask local residents or the community, you know, how they can help with the program. Contact partners for assistance in preparing and reviewing your application. And you can always contact us if you have any eligibility questions. Something that I forgot to mention this year, something that has changed from the past. I really want to emphasize that energy-related training is not eligible this year. Training in energy auditing, weatherization, Building Performance Institute-related training is not eligible. Other federal agencies are heavily funding that type of training, and we as the EPA do not want to duplicate that type of training. Next slide. Here is a list on 69, all the regional job training coordinators with their phone numbers and email address. Next slide. Web-based resources. Here's a list of different links and resources. I won't go through all of them. And lastly, we just have a few slides of some of our grantees. And 72, that's the graduation ceremony. That's the point everyone waits for. One other thing I would mention. A lot of applicants are turned off by this grant program because we do not allow life skills or pre-employment training, such as GED preparation, transportation, all the really critical life skills that make a program successful. We know that the Department of Labor provides funding to workforce investment boards, one-stop centers, that there are many community-based organizations out there that can offer these life skills training and pre-employment training through their funds. So we really look for partnerships with those organizations. Maybe you're a workforce investment board on the other hand, but you don't know anything about environmental protection or the environmental field. So you're going to need a partner on the other hand with the community colleges and those organizations that really understand the environmental field. Again, community colleges or nonprofit organizations, we don't allow grant funds to be used for indirect costs or administrative costs. That means overhead costs. It's ineligible. This grant program, you can look at it kind of as seed money in a way. You can do a lot with $200,000, don't get me wrong, but you're going to have to leverage other sources of funding. And with that, I'll open it up now for questions.
Okay, great. Thank you, Joe. Again, this is Jean Valance, and I'm going to help to moderate the questions. For those of you who have been typing up your questions electronically, I do have a number of them in the queue. I'm going to switch, though, to the phone lines and allow those of you who are streaming audio to continue to type up your comments or questions. So if you haven't done that already, you can still click that question mark button and type up a comment or question in the window that will pop up. While we let some of those additional electronic questions come into the queue, I'd like to turn to the phone audience. If anybody's on the phone line and you have a comment or question, you're welcome to take yourself off of mute. You can either, again, if you use your own button, or hit #6 to unmute your line, and we'd ask that you identify yourself or organization, and then feel free to make your comment or ask your question.
Hello, we'd like to offer a question.
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. Under the labor market demand requirement, you use the word recent. Can you clarify how recent you mean?
I don't think we actually have an exact, you know, definition of recent, but, you know, oftentimes we'll get proposals that provide general statistics about, you know, the survey conducted and this year indicated a demand of 5% for hazardous waste worker technicians in our county. Well, maybe that's not as strong as an applicant that did direct employer surveying where they contacted 20 local contractors in the community and, you know, asked them what types of certifications they were looking for, what the prospective dates of employment and hiring would be, if they spoke with their, you know, local economic development office and figured out, okay, well, we know that there's going to be a cleanup project, you know, at this location on this day, you know, so try to be as specific as possible. You know, recent, we don't really define it.
Okay.
Okay, if anyone on the phone, again, it's #6 to unmute, and then feel free to ask your question.
Don't be shy.
Okay, well, I don't hear anybody, so I'm going to start with some of the questions that have been submitted online, and then we'll switch back over to the phones in a few minutes. So this first question, yes, go ahead, Kathleen.
I'd like to augment what Joe said about recent. I would say recent as using the reasonable standard. If it's older than a year, I would say I wouldn't use it because the Department of Labor will give out those statistics at least once a year, and I think even more than that. So I would say no older than a year because I don't think they would be relevant to your community. Things change, and so I would be looking for something at least under a year old as far as studies are concerned or surveys.
Okay, great. Thank you. If there's nothing else on that one question, I'll go ahead to some of the ones electronically. And the first question is coming in from New York. And they first made a comment that in placing our graduates, we discovered most job opportunities required either a BS in science or a 4-year degree, or 5 to 7 years of previous experience in the field. But with the underemployed and unemployed in our area, few of them actually met those qualifications. And they ask, what would you suggest they do in the future to conquer that type of a challenge?
I would suggest that if you're in New York, you can pick up the phone and call Strive East Harlem or St. Nicholas Neighborhood Preservation Corps. I don't know, maybe the question's coming from one of those organizations, but they've trained and placed hundreds of individuals in entry-level employment. An environmental technician doesn't require a 4-year degree. Many of these jobs don't require a 4-year degree. I would say that the trades and many environmental employers are much more forgiving to individuals that may have a criminal record, for example, versus other sectors. So there are many examples of employment opportunities, entry-level employment opportunities, where graduates have been placed.
And that is also where you really do need to know your employer community prior to developing your training program so that you'll know exactly what is expected, what their expectations is for any new hiree. And you also work with your employer community to work out some type of on-the-job training where they get paid, but that they may be paid at a lesser rate than those that would have had more education or experience, so that your graduates can garner that type of experience and move up the ladder.
I'd also add that, you know, the point of the program is to target those with severe employment barriers, the unemployed, the underemployed. You can, however, as the frequently asked questions say, target dislocated workers. Maybe you're in a Midwestern community where there's been a recent plant closure and you have a lot of unemployed individuals, but, you know, they're skilled. They have 15 years of experience or more, but they need retraining. You can use a portion of the grant funds to target those individuals, but you also really want to target individuals that don't have a 4-year degree. I mean, that's not what this program's about.
Okay, great. Our next question comes in from Boston, Massachusetts, and they ask, can you recommend curriculum resources for the awareness training? And they're talking specifically underground storage tank leak prevention, solid waste management, and cleanup and wastewater treatment.
Yes, please contact Kathleen Castagna in Region 1, the job training coordinator. And you can also email me, Joe Bress. and I will give you some resources.
Okay, great. Our next question comes in from Durham, North Carolina, and they actually have two questions. The first one, they want to be sure that they heard you correctly when you stated that air quality-related training would not be eligible.
That's correct. I would argue, though, for example, vapor intrusion monitoring and some types of indoor air quality as they're related to hazardous waste sites would be eligible. But, you know, training in air-related fields such as diesel emissions or engine retrofitting, some of that type of training wouldn't be eligible.
Okay, and their second part question asks, if recent graduates from environmental degree programs from local universities, are they actually eligible to enroll in training? Because they've heard that employers, that a mix of like technical training and practical hands-on would be attractive to them.
I would say you would want to steer away from that and, again, target those that don't have a four-year degree. We know that times are tough right now, and on-the-job training or internships are really critical. But really, you're going to have to make a strong argument as to why those individuals need this additional training. Sounds like they need on-the-job training or actual employment at this point. They've already been through a four-year degree program, so... Yeah.
Okay. Our next question is a simple one from Boston, Massachusetts, and they ask, can the project period be less than 3 years?
Yes.
Okay. And our next question is also coming in from North Carolina. They ask if you could repeat what was stated in 523 about previous awardees from fiscal year 11 being ineligible to apply.
Right. So if you received an Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training grant last year, in FY11, you are not eligible to apply unless you are going to propose to serve a different city. And when I say that, you know, we know that some nonprofit organizations especially are national in scope. The Conservation Corps, you know, there's many different conservation corps. Strive. I mentioned Strive earlier. They have many Strive offices in different cities throughout the U.S., in New York, in Boston, etc. But, you know, I wouldn't try to come in and say, oh, well, we got a grant to serve Durham last year, and now we're going to propose to serve this town 10 miles away. You know, try to make the distinction a little bit more, you know, strong. And again, you know, the selection official's gonna ask, you know, who of these applicants have received funding in the past? And he's gonna take that into consideration. You know, we wanna fund organizations that have a proven track record, but at the same time, we also wanna fund new organizations.
Okay, great. Our next question, asks, did I hear you say that regular transportation to training was not an EPA-eligible cost? Is there any training-related participant transportation that is an eligible cost under this cooperative agreement?
Be careful and read the eligible costs and ineligible costs of the guidelines. And I don't want to misspeak, so I don't have a copy of the guidelines in front of me right now. But it's specifically listed in there. Maybe Kathleen has a copy in front of her and she can tell you the language. But you know, you can always email me too if you need more clarification on that.
Okay.
I have the guidelines. What was the question so I can email?
Transportation costs. Are they eligible?
Transportation costs. Okay. Go on to the next question while I look it up, please. I don't think it is.
Okay.
Let's change.
This is Olga. Earlier you guys said it was not.
Right, but we need to get clarification on that.
Right, that's what I'm looking at now.
I believe we say transportation to and from class is an eligible use of funds. But we'll come back to that. Next question.
Wait, I found it. Page 6 of the guidelines. Costs associated with eligible participant support costs, including transportation for trainees, for psych visits during training, or for trainings getting to and from class. It is now eligible.
Okay. Excellent. Our next question, coming in from Boston, Massachusetts, asks, does the commitment letter from the training provider count against the page limit for the attachment?
Yes. It's a support letter, so it needs to be included in that page limitation.
Okay. Our next question asks, how can we best describe that we have had past federal grants and completed them successfully? Haven't had any job training grants, but several others, all of which are in closeout. We want to document properly that we completed them. Is it sufficient to just say that they were closed and completed as described?
You know what the page limitation is for the narrative part of the proposal. So if you have some space to elaborate and say that you received a different EPA grant award, for example, you know, a targeted watershed grant, and, you know, list some of the outputs or outcomes that you accomplished under that grant. You know, there's many organizations that apply, and they've never done job training before, you know, but they have received other grants or federal funds. So, you know, I would elaborate a little bit. I wouldn't just say the grant closed out successfully. That's kind of vague.
And a good way of doing that is make it in chart or table format, and that way you can get a lot more information in rather than narrative. And you can put a column for outcomes, outputs, list a few of them, or accomplishments, if you will, and that could be for each one of the grants that you have successfully performed and closed out.
Okay, great. Our next question asks, if we have been able to achieve another fund that will directly cover most of our training costs and associated travel, in parentheses, at least 50% of our program costs, we might want to request funding that primarily covers program operations for a staff person. Will this be reviewed favorably?
I'm trying to... I don't want to ask you to read the question over again. So you already have another grant where you can cover most of the training costs. Why can't that grant be used to help pay some of the personnel costs?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, usually if we have a proposal and most of the grant funds are going to pay, you know, personnel, I mean, of course, you can use grant funds for the actual training provider or whoever's certified to do the training. You can use the grant funds to pay for someone that's going to assist with placement or employer involvement. But, you know, we don't look so fondly on proposals where the executive director that's spending, you know, 2% of their time on this grant project is getting, you know, $50,000. So, but, you know, again, you can email me or the regional job training coordinator, and we're happy to discuss that.
Okay. Our next question is coming in from Arkansas, and they ask, would a partnership with a workforce center to provide pre-employment training count as part of an in-kind match?
Absolutely. Love it. Yes.
Okay. And related to that, we are applying on behalf of a partnership. When we demonstrate our capacity and experience, are we discussing the capacity of the applicant agency or the partnership?
It depends. I would say both, yes. But we're going to look to see whoever the fiduciary recipient is going to be of the grant funds, that they have the ability to manage a grant, a federal grant. Whoever whoever the fiduciary recipient is. But, you know, if someone in the partnership is going to help provide the training, you know, we'll take that into consideration if they're the anticipated training provider under the organizational capacity sub-factor.
Okay. The next question is in reference to a grant from last year, and they say that last year's EWDJT grant funded an applicant to develop a program that directly competes with activities very similar to our pre-existing program. How do I rationalize that we aren't submitting a proposal where there is an issue with that, quote, duplication, which was created by the EWDJT program?
I would like to speak to you more in person so I can get more details. Are they serving a certain neighborhood in the city that you also want to serve? Hopefully you'll serve a different neighborhood in that city. I don't know what the details are.
And I would direct the person, because it was an anonymous question, so they removed their contact info, so I would encourage them to follow up with you offline, either by phone or email, and I'll provide closeout information on how they can do that if they're not sure.
Okay.
I'll move on to the next question coming in from Brooklyn, New York, and they ask, in the core curriculum, it states awareness for solid waste, innovative wastewater, et cetera. They want you to define, quote, awareness in reference to the RFP.
Yeah, I think I kind of already did. Maybe you submitted that question before I got into that, but it could be, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. But, again, we want you to really provide advanced training if that type of component of the core curriculum is pertinent to hiring needs in your community. We would really love to see applications that capitalize on, you know, some of those different types of training, whether it's tank-related training or Superfund or wastewater or chemical safety.
Okay. We've got two more questions online, and then we'll switch back over to the phone. And this next question that's coming in online is from Boston, Massachusetts. They ask, is recycling and or deconstruction considered part of a solid waste management, or are they otherwise eligible trainings if supported by results of a labor market survey?
Yes, they are included in the solid waste-related required training, and it is eligible, absolutely.
Okay, and our next question is actually coming in from Washington, D.C., and they say, forgive me, this was covered, but we just received an abundance of information. The first question, I think you guys have already answered this, but it's somewhat different. They ask, is this grant program offered yearly? So if you don't meet the qualification in this submission cycle, can they apply next year?
Yes. It is an annual competition. I don't foresee that the budget's going to be cut next year for the program. I mean, it could happen, but I anticipate that we'll have another competition in FY13.
Okay. And the next part of their question, they ask, does the grant allow you to purchase safety equipment needed during the training, like vests, goggles, paint reclamation suits, sharps and needles, protective gloves? And if it does, where is this covered?
It's a supply cost, but if it's over what dollar amount, then it's considered equipment, Kathleen?
Anything over $5,000 or more per item. So, but I would never expect for you to buy equipment costing that much. So you can go to other grantees, go to our website, and they have purchased the PPE equipment for their students, and you can see what the average cost is. I think it's about $500. Anywhere from $200 to $500, depending on what they buy. But work that out with your regional project officer prior to purchase.
And try to leverage those funds. Yeah. Go to your local Home Depot and ask.
Yeah. Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace Hardware, wherever they sell the PPE equipment.
Okay. So those are all of the online questions that I have submitted. I'm going to turn back to the phone lines. If any of the phone participants have a question, you can feel free to take yourself off of mute. You may need to either unmute on your end or hit pound 6 to deactivate the phone mute and then identify yourself and organization before asking your question.
Anybody?
Yes, hi. Can we get your email address, because all we have is a telephone connection, because we're interested in slide 69.
My email address is Bruss, that's my last name, B-R-U-S like Sam, S like Sam, dot Joseph, J-O-S-E-P-H, at epa.gov. Or you can call me at 202-566-2772.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Contact information for Joe is on slide 2.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Houston McKinnon from Omaha, Nebraska, president of North Omaha Contractors Alliance. And I want to thank you guys again, because the second time I went through this, now I got a better understanding on how to put this proposal grant together. I just would like to say thank y'all.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Good luck. I can't remember the last time a proposal came from Nebraska, so yeah, that makes me happy.
Oh, okay. Hey, that makes me real happy knowing that I'm back in line because, like I said, right now, I got a little contract with the Department of Labor, and we're training in lead safe practices, has whopper, and things of that nature. We're trying to get these guys employable. And then I have some contractors in the organization that can't wait to hire some of these skilled laborers. So I'm going to try my best to compete this year.
Excellent.
Good luck. Excellent.
All right. Thank you.
We wish you well. Success.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yep, again, it's pound 6 to unmute. Feel free to identify yourself or organization. Okay, I don't see any other questions that have been submitted electronically. So before we move on, Joe and Kathleen, do you guys have any closing statements you'd like to make?
I just always say good luck and don't be intimidated.
And make sure you contact your regional job training coordinator. They're there to assist you. Ask them questions. Of course, we are now under a silence or gap or a gap, or if you will. So the only thing we can talk about is clarification within the guidelines and eligibility. But become acquainted with your regional coordinator, job training coordinator throughout this. And good luck to all.
Thank you, great.
Thank you, guys. So with that, I'm going to direct everyone to the final slide, which is slide number 73. For anybody who's just on the phone and doesn't have a copy of the slide, you can't get to them right now if you didn't register, but within 2 weeks or less, we'll have them available to download publicly from the CLUIN archives area. So if you can just remember the website CLUIN, CLUIN.org, you'll be able to go there and follow links for live events or training, and there'll be a link for archive training. You'll be able to find the training and actually download it from there. So I'm going to refer everyone again to slide number 73, and you'll find two very important links on that slide. The first one is a link to the additional resources page for today's event, which is a page where you can not only download the PowerPoint presentation, but also take a look at a number of other related websites like grants.gov, and other EPA, or the links to the previously funded job training grant recipients in your area, and a number of other things that our instructors have put together for your reference for today. You'll also find a link to our short feedback form. It does take just a minute or two to submit that and let us know what you thought of today's session. I do read all the submissions, and if you'd like to continue to see training like this offered for free through Fluent, it's really important that you take a minute to fill the form out and let us know what you thought. If you're looking to get confirmation of your participation today for whatever training records you may be keeping, by submitting your feedback form, you can actually check a box on that form, and a confirmation email will be sent to you for your records, at least verifying that you did submit a feedback form for today's event. If you share the line with multiple participants, each person can submit their own form. In fact, once you fill out the feedback form, there'll be links to let the next person hop on and fill out their own feedback and request their own confirmation email. If you're looking at a printed copy of the presentation materials and not at a computer with internet access, these slides can be found on the, or these links are found at the seminar homepage, which will be active from today at this point forward. So at any point, you can go back to the seminar homepage and follow the links that appear on the left or at the bottom of the page to, again, the feedback as well as the links to resources area. So with that, I want to extend my thanks to everyone who helped organize today's seminar, in particular our presenters, Joe Bruss from the EPA's Office of Brownfield and Land Revitalization, as well as Kathleen Curry from EPA's Region 4. I want to thank the almost 50 people who joined us this Friday afternoon from all over the U.S. to participate in today's session. I hope that you found today to be a useful expenditure of your time and that we will hear from you on a future Clumen seminar. Remember, as soon as this archived or recorded version of the training is available, you will automatically receive an email from me with a link to download and replay, and you'll be welcome to forward that on to anyone that you think will find it of use. So with that, this will be the formal conclusion for today's session, and I hope you guys have a great weekend. Thank you all very much for your time and patience today with my audio connection.